Blog Talk Radio.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Welcome. It's Mark the Game Changer in the house. RSG Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio. We are on the new show, new format here called Hustle and Flows. This is where myself and a new addition to the RSG fam, my man Sekou. Sekou, how you doing tonight, brother?
Good, man. Good. Pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you on. So Sekou is bringing a hip-hop flavor to the RSG family. And he and I, both being hip-hop heads, are going to collaborate and begin this collaboration. We're going to do a new show where we kind of mesh hip-hop talk, sports talk, all into one nice hour package for all of the RSG people out there who want to talk music, but also like to talk a little sports. So most of our talk, though, is going to be music, and we're going to get into a lot of things tonight. We have a great show in store for you all. So just sit back, relax, and let us do what we do for the next 40 minutes or so. We're going to keep it live, we're going to keep it hype, and we're going to keep it rolling. Now, Sekou, you want to tell the folks a little bit about yourself, kind of tell your story, kind of how you got into hip-hop, kind of your background, things that you enjoy and you like doing, and kind of where you're at with everything as far as how hip hop goes.
Gotcha. Well, I'm a Brooklyn kid, born and raised. Born in the 70s. Some say 80s baby, but really 90s is where I came of age. So my older brother introduced me to hip hop. He was about 7 years older than me, so he was the one breakdancing in the house, breaking up the furniture, and I was kind of just trying to understand what was going on. You know, I'm listening to Top 40 stuff, and, man, this is stuff he won't let me listen to. So kind of took to it. I have an East Coast bias, admittedly. I've tried over the years to educate myself on other in hip-hop in other areas, and I think pretty much now, having lived in Chicago, so I went to school in New York, worked in New York, then I went to a grad school in Chicago, right around 03-04 when the Kanye explosion kind of happened in Chicago, and so that influenced me a lot. Now I'm down in Texas, which is just a whole other world, right, of hip-hop down here. So, I say I have a pretty diverse taste right now, but I will always, and preface this, you know, for our conversation, have an East Coast New York bias. I can't help it. I lived out there, so don't go there. You know, that's just how I am. But I think I'm pretty objective when it comes to, taking in music. And so, actually, when I was in, moved to Chicago and I was in grad school and poor and missing a lot of my friends back home and missing the barbershop, I started doing these hip-hop wrap-ups and just, you know, writing what I think were the best things going on in hip-hop that year, and I would email it to everyone I knew, and people would say, you're an idiot, this, this, and that, and we'd go back and forth on email. And now I kind of just post them to, you know, various social media outlets, and I still have the people sending me posts like, you're an idiot, this is not right, you haven't listened to this, how dare you not put Run the Jewels 2 on, your list last year. I'm like, oh, sorry, I just wasn't feeling it. What can I tell you? So looking back, it's been about 10 years, and I've done this every year. You know, it's in prepping for this show, I kind of saw how my tastes and been informed by what's going on and how much the game has changed over the last decade even. And so looking forward to our discussion and, you know, looking forward to the feedback from the show so people can tell me I'm an idiot and I need to listen to this and listen to that.
Absolutely, and that's what I would love. This will definitely be a cultural exchange, so to speak. We both have our taste, and I appreciate you being upfront about your East Coast bias. we both have our taste. We both have our leanings, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's great to be able to get exposed to that back and forth with folks who maybe put us up on something, and maybe we're putting people up on new things that maybe they haven't checked, or they're going to go back and check with a fresher ear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what we hope this platform, this podcast, kind of opens up doors for folks who, you know, again, especially for some of us older heads, right? I'm in my 30s.
Yeah.
You know, so we kind of get disconnected from being super, super up on the freshest, latest underground cat who's recording, you know, albums in his bedroom. You know, we kind of a little bit far. We're not like we were in our 20s where we got that cat's mixtape, you know what I mean? So it's good
years
to kind of get
it
a feel for
yeah.
what's bubbling. Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. So I appreciate you sharing my story. That implores me to share your story. That implores me to share my story a little bit. Being a Midwesterner, grew up in Chicago, been in Wisconsin.
Yep.
And went to college and everything in Wisconsin for most of my teenage years and adult life. Grew up on, and this is the interesting piece, is that, you know, there's a little bit of a West Coast leaning. Like you, I was brought into hip-hop through contact with older uncles, cousins. It was just around, you know, and this was in the mid-90s, the early 90s, when the late 80s, early 90s, N.W.A., gangster rap was big, and that was what kind of resonated with folks in Chicago at that time. So that's kind of what I was brought into. You know, then you got the house scene in Chicago. And so my hip-hop influence was pretty different and diverse because it was just a little bit more open. There were a little bit more things that were acceptable because we were kind of in the middle of the country. So we listened to some of the stuff on the East. We listened to some of the stuff on the West, and as I grew older, I found myself kind of really resonating and things that really kind of connected with me were Southern artists. So that's something that we can explore a little bit as we get into this kind of first round in the show. So we both kind of have prefaced kind of how we got into the music, kind of told our story a little bit. We both were kind of introduced to it by older heads who kind of put us on the things and kind of piqued our interest, and we kind of took it and ran with it. I'm sure, you know, for me, as I got older and into my teenage years, my early teens, I started to kind of get my own stuff, right, and build my own collection. You know, right now I have like four or five shoeboxes in my basement full of cassettes that I can't do anything with anymore. It's not like that's the bad thing about cassettes. They're not like vinyl. With vinyl, you can still, you know, pop it on and listen. A cassette is just like a cassette.
I don't even have a cassette player anymore. The last move I did, it got destroyed. I'm like, these things are useless. But I will say, for Christmas, my father-in-law got me one of those converters, the cassette to MP3 converter. So I have a box of tapes that my wife cannot wait until I convert so she can get rid of that box. But I got, you know, stuff recorded off the radio. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was impossible to find some of those songs, so I'm not giving it up.
Absolutely, and that was the grind back then. And that's what I mean, as that fervor that we had for it, where, you know, I would, you know, there was one show in Madison when I was a teenager, and it came on Saturday nights at 10:30 at night. It was a Universal Soul Explosion, and you knew you were going to get, like, your dope. Because at this point, there was, like, no real hip-hop station. And I know some of the younger listeners out there cannot fathom that. But there were parts of the country. I'm sure you, as an East Coast, you're like, what? But then you're talking about the middle of the country, there was no hip-hop station. You know, you might get a breakthrough chart topper, but it usually was some candy bubblegum type stuff. You know, you really got some of those real hard cuts, except on the Universal Soul Explosion. And it came on 89.9 WRT here in Madison. And I used to stay up. I put a tape in, and I just put my headphones on and lay down in the bed, and I go to sleep to it. And then at some point in the middle of the night, I wake up, flip it over, because it was on from 10:30 from 10 to 2 in the morning. I flip it over, hit record, and every Sunday morning was like Christmas. I couldn't wait to get up just to hear what was played. You know what I mean?
I can relate. And anyone, that was a real underground hip hop guy in New York knows Stretch and Bobbito was that exact show.
Yeah.
And Stretch and Bobbito came on Thursday nights from like 10 to 2. So, you know, the thing was, I'd do the exact same thing, right? Sit in, I would try to stay awake because, you know, Stretch and Bobbito, I mean, they would talk. They would talk for like 45 minutes in the middle of a show, and you didn't really want to catch them just talking nonsense. So you were trying to catch the music, but you'd fall asleep, wake up, try to turn it over. And that next day, man, it's me and my boys would be sleepwalking through class on Friday. But, like, did you catch that the new Biggie one that he played? Oh, did you catch that, you know, XYZ that he played? And that was, you know, the beauty. So I can relate. But, yeah, that staying up late to catch the pirate radio because it had all the curses and no censoring. So we had a hip-hop station, but, you know, you had to hear the radio version. So that was the only place you heard just raucous cursing on the radio. So it's probably not even allowed right now. But that was where it was. So I could definitely relate.
Yeah. And so, you know, I go through that phase, those teenage years. And, you know, again, I'm building my own collection as I go through, getting things that I'm really into, you know. And then I go to college. And my freshman year of college, Napster drops. And, you know, for a kid like me, I was like, yo, forget class. I'm downloading songs. It was like the floodgates opened, and you had access to all of this music at your fingertips. You had to, you know, deal with the whole slow downloading time of that particular era, you know, with the dial-up and that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
It was
always worth it for that song that downloaded complete, and you to go find something that, you know, you hadn't heard yet, or you had only read about in the source or magazine or Excel or whatever. And to go get it and have it like as yours, and you know, then I was into putting in making mix CDs, and so that was my little hustle in college was, you know, I get on Napster, get the new stuff, and then, you know, put it on CD, give them, call my boys over, play it for them, get them to bug out about it, and then charge them, make them a disc.
You weren't selling them out your trunk, but you were almost selling them out your trunk.
Exactly. I was telling them about the dorm room. You know, to be hot off the press, though. Hot off the burner. So, you know, and so then it evolved into that. And, you know, as I progressed through college, obviously, you know, the downloading game evolved a little bit. But still to this day, you know, I've been able to kind of pick up things here or there from online. Unfortunately, I'll admit this, I rarely buy music now, but I still get a ton. Because I mean, the internet makes it very easy to access things.
Really easy.
So I mean, I'm still taking advantage of that. You know, that Napster thing kind of ruined me.
So you're the generation that killed the rap industry. They're talking about you. So I'm a little older than you. So when I was in college, there was no Napster. I mean, we had internet, but there was really no way to get this stuff. And it wasn't until I graduated, so it has been around 98, 99. And I remember one of my boys at school, I think I went back to visit him, and I said, oh, yeah, you know, I got this XYZ. I think maybe I picked it up from 125th Street or something. He's like, oh, yeah, I had that 2 weeks ago. I was like, how'd you get it 2 weeks ago? I just downloaded everything. And it just blew my mind. And so, you know, after that, buying music to him and to folks that came was just an abstract idea. Whereas it took me a while until I went heavy into the download game, and now I'm a slave to Spotify for better or for worse. I mean, it's the in between.
That's
I was like, all right, I'm paying
well.
A little bit, but at least I can hear all the stuff. And if it's a terrible album, I don't feel like I want my $16 back.
Yeah, that investment has changed. But absolutely, I mean, that whole era of Napster and everything, it brought And I was, that's always been a piece of kind of curating hip hop music for those of us that kind of do that, is we all have, it's always good to be the first with it, right? There's always that extra bit of cool. You're cool if you got it, you know, but you're even cooler if you're the first one with it. So if somebody comes by and they say, you know, I got the new Capone and Noriega. And, well, I had that 2 weeks ago. Well, you win. You're cooler. You had it 2 weeks ago.
You got me. Yeah. You win today.
You know what I mean?
I'll see you tomorrow.
You know what I mean? Yep. You know, the one phrase you hated to hear somebody say was, oh, I've been bumping that. And then you look at them like, no, you weren't. Prove it. Prove it.
Show me. Show me.
You know,
let me see it.
Yeah, that was the one Trump card, that was the one phrase you did not want to hear, is I've been bumping that. And then you're kind of like, what? What you mean? This just came out today. That would always kind of get your goat a little bit.
Yeah.
So you talked about kind of where you're at today as far as kind of the consumer and, you know, how the game has changed from that perspective. And, you know, I do have to raise my hand and say I am a part of that generation that sort of ruined the record industry as we knew it. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. You know, I feel like it forced into a peculiar spot. But I also think it opened up the game, for better or for worse, to everybody. Because as long as you had access to the internet and you could upload your stuff, you got it in the hands of the right people. You know, it kind of took away the game. It reorganized the gatekeeping aspect of the game. But I do miss those days where, you know, I'm at a Sam Goody after school on a Tuesday, you know, and just walking down the aisle and looking at the new releases and seeing what came out today and just having that kind of appointment. You know, it made Tuesdays matter.
Yeah, Tuesday used to really matter. Now it's like, it doesn't matter at all. Now albums coming out Friday. I was like, Friday, that's unheard of.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the kind of consumerist, the consumerist part of it, as far as the music that the hip hop culture produces. But from an overall aspect, you know, hip hop in the Midwest obviously is slightly different than hip hop out east, which is slightly different than hip hop in the West, which is slightly different than hip hop culture, as a cultural orientation and a way of looking at the world. It's different from region to region, and even within the regions, you know, what's going on in Chicago is very different than what's happening in Detroit, which is very different than what's happening in St. Louis, if you're going through the Midwest, you know, and I'm sure Texas is. I mean, you go from Houston to Dallas and they're two different universes, you know, within the same state. So, you know, as you talk about kind of the culture of hip-hop, you know, and we talk about hip-hop, and for the listeners out there, we talk about hip-hop, we talk about a perspective, a culture that encompasses art, politics, literature, all these things. This is a lens through which we see the world, and rap music, hip-hop music is just one expression of that lens and one, you know, passing of ideas, filtering of ideas through that lens. So, you know, when we talk about hip-hop on this show, and you can challenge me on that if you feel like you have a different definition. That's just the working. That's just kind of how I approach it when I talk to people about hip-hop, because people equate the music, and the music is it, right? The music is the epicenter.
Oh, yeah. No,
which is not it. The music is a byproduct of many other things that come into play. But it's not just music. So I want to just make that clarification for listeners. When we're talking about hip-hop, that's not just rap music or hip-hop music or however you want to define the musical expression of this culture that, you know, I've grown up in and say who you've grown up in. But when we talk about that culture, what role does it play for you in your day-to-day existence?
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's a difficult question, but I'll try to answer it, right? It's it does a couple of things. I think personally it connects me, right? It connects me to my past. So I whenever I hear a song, you can always remember where you were the first time you heard it or when an album came out. And so that's one thing it does. But it also, you know, the music connects me to people older and younger than me, right? So I'm a college professor now, so I'm interacting with students that are 18, 19 years old from Texas. I grew up in New York, right? They're all different kind of races. And but the music and the culture around it and the slang and the perspective and the emotion and all that connects me to them, even though I'm sometimes twice their age or more, right? So I remember I had a student in my class telling me about their weekend, and he was like, oh, yeah, I had a softball intramural game, and the name of our team is Running Around the Bases with My Woes. And this was a white kid from, you know, Dallas, right? Like, he and I have nothing in common,
yeah,
but we connected instantaneously with that statement. And I laughed. I was like, that's actually really good. And he knew I would like it, and he's like, yeah, that is kind of really good. So it connects me. And I think it also educates me. So, you know, listening to music, particularly when you listen to music from people that are just living a completely different experience than you, right? So me listening to Common in 92 just kind of blew my mind, because I knew Brooklyn, I knew New York. I didn't really know what urban Chicago was about. And the pictures that he painted were just amazing to me, you know. And so it almost made me say, man, I feel like I have a lot in common with this area of the country that, you know, I've never been. I don't know anyone from there, but, you know, I instantaneously had that. So it educated me, and it educates, you know, me about struggles that others have, that they're dealing with, emotions they're dealing with, fads that come along. And so so the culture, you know, connects me, educates me, and then I think it also motivates me. And so it's the soundtrack of my life, right? And so I listen to music when I'm trying to get amped up. I listen to music when I'm in the gym. I listen to music when I'm trying to relax. And so, you know, the emotion that's in it ends up being the emotion that I either have or, you know, start to have, right? So, you know, you listen to a certain kind of music, after a while you start to behave in ways that are similar to that. And so, you know, the motivation, the inspiration, that raw emotion, you know, hip-hop is one of the few things that can really get me to act like a fool. Yeah, I tell this to my wife all the time.
Absolutely.
Like, oh,
wait,
we need to have a cut loose. So I was like, you know, even when I'm at a game, room for my team, but let me be at a party and someone throws on a mean set. I'll come out in my suit, jacket, tie. I won't care what, you know, that's something that you need to have in life, something that hits you as such a core aspect of your being that it elicits this positive feeling. And, you know, so that's the part. So, you know, the connection, education, and I think the motivation.
I love that. I love the way you broke that down. I love the way you broke that down. And I agree with you on several levels. I oftentimes kind of frame it up for people that it allows me to tap into my lineage, you know, and it's been a gateway and a vessel that has taken me on a journey, not only into my future and the future of others, but also the past. You know, there's so many old records that I went back and got into, and old music and old stories and artists and learning, you know, history through the fact that somebody took something, whether it be a JD or a DJ Premier or Timbaland or whoever, they took something, a piece of a small snapshot from a piece of art, and took it and molded it into something else in a new context and a new time. And it's almost like you get to time travel through it. And that's what I feel like. I feel like I get to time travel through hip-hop. I get to go back to being a 16-year-old when I first heard ATLian. You know, every time I put it back on, you know, that's the one I listen to in the fall. Like, I always throw that on once in the fall because, you know, back in the day, September was the time when the joints came out. Like,
come on.
You know, September, they were always the heavy, big artists would drop something in September. In the mid early 90s, that was kind of the routine label practice, was to drop
fourth quarter
at that point. And so
exactly.
So I always go back to being that 16-year-old at the beginning of the school year, 96, and getting that album and just remembering all of those feelings of, you know, being on the bus on the way to school and just listening to that album back and forth, you know. And so, again, it allows me to kind of go back to that you know, take me back to my college locker room. And as you said, the emotions that it allows you to kind of put. I had a mix, a strong mix that I would listen to before my I was an athlete before my games, and I would
sit
and I was total silence by myself, zone. And I mean, you know, Biggie, you know, Renegade, Jay-Z, Eminem, Renegade, you know, just hard stuff, you know, Tupac, Ambitions of a Rider, just that kind of stuff to get you in that mode to go out and put in some work on somebody. And just, you know, allowing me to reconnect with that and keeping me grounded in those experiences. But as you said, you know, I worked in a high school, allowing me to connect with my kids and being able to, you know, talk to them about Future's last album, you know, being able to, you know, in the Midwest, you know, critique Keith Keith, you know, and get kids to think about it differently, you know, talk about Kendrick's album, talk about J. Cole. I can have those conversations with young people and they respect where I'm coming from, because we're sharing a oral history, you know, and as you said, being able to drop a phrase, two people that have never met connect around that phrase because of this music, because of this culture, is a very powerful thing. It's a very, very powerful thing. And it's something that I've enjoyed. So, you know, thinking about the evolution of things, and you talked about the end of the year wrap up and how it's evolved over time. Tell us a little bit more about how you have kind of, as you've reflected on this, how you've seen it evolve in the last 10 years that you've done it.
Yeah, I mean, the only way I can describe it is it's been growth, right? The hip-hop music and the culture has grown. And, you know, a lot of people think about growth in like a positive sense of getting bigger, but growth is really just painful, confusing, you know, nerve-wracking experience. You know, any growth experience is never just all good. And so, you know, I just looked at different times that I was frustrated with the certain things I was seeing. I was angry about other things I was seeing. I thought there should be more of this left in the game. You know, I know, you know, again, New York, right? I mean, it fell from, you know, the pinnacle, from being top of the world and being the tastemakers, to being relegated to, you know, has-beens, right? So now you have New York rappers have a chip on their shoulder, like, oh, I'm going to bring New York back, I'm going to bring New York back. And that's because they really didn't want things to change, right? So artists that were in established areas wanted things to stay the same. Artists in new areas, so artists coming from New Orleans, artists coming from Atlanta, Memphis, you know, Mississippi, all these areas, now, you know, North Carolina is now just incredible. They want things to change more quickly. So you have this tug and pull, collectives developing, peace treaties, you know, wars kind of flaring up in different areas. And that's, to me, all part of growth. And so I think when I first wrote the first couple back in 03, 04, there was a lot of, I'm angry about this and I don't like this. And, you know, it was almost like me setting whoever straight about what should or shouldn't be good. And I quickly realized my taste kind of changed, and I realized I can either be that guy that's just like, you kids get off my lawn, I hate all this new music, you know, it's not for me, it's for kids with big caps and skinny jeans. Or I can, you know, broaden my horizon a little bit, you know, keep my tastes and my preferences, but try to embrace some new trends, right? Listen to some Future and 2 Chainz and, you know, really let it hit me, not judge before I hear it. And so now, as I write these up, I find, you know, I'll write it up just without thinking about it, and then I'll say, like, man, I don't have a New York person on this list. You know, this list is all in Detroit. Or this list is heavy Detroit and West Coast, you know, and it won't be that I had some agenda that I was like, oh, well, I'm going to talk good about this and negative about this. It was just, here's what I think is dope. And what's dope right now is coming from here, here, and here. And it's this, this, and this. And I love that. And other people need to step their game up. And that would be it, right? And so the growth of it has been impressive, but it's also created a lot of people just falling in and out of love with hip-hop because it'll move in a certain direction. You know, all you got to do is say Drake, and that's an argument, right? Because people have such strong and bifurcated opinions about Drake. And so I've appreciated, I've gotten to a place where I can love and hate Drake's music at the same time. Like, literally love track 3 and hate track 4. And I don't feel like that. Yeah, I don't feel like that means anything new. He's just someone I'm ambivalent about. That is kind of the biggest change I think I've seen. I've personally experienced, and I kind of noticed this with people my age and then talking to people who are younger. Like, they just get angry with certain things, and I don't think it dawns on them that this is part of the growth of the culture. As it goes into other areas, you're just going to have to deal with things that you don't really like. And you can either cling to the past or you can embrace the future. And so I'm just hopefully trying to convince people, embrace this. You know, listen to this. This is actually really kind of good. And here's why it's kind of good. And we can argue about it, but you got to listen to it first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the perspectives you kind of brought up in that particular talk right there. Because, you know, as we age, you know, I find myself, and I find friends of mine, I find myself calling my friends out because, again, being from the Midwest is a very different perspective. Like, there was never – we were always open to other stuff because we had to be. Like, we didn't have the clout, right? We didn't have the East Coast clout where it's like, we are the aficionados. That's always the way East Coast folks kind of came off, is like, yo, you guys don't know nothing. This is the real. You know what I mean?
We are arrogant.
And we were kind of always like,
say
well,
that now.
You know, we were open to stuff. You know, we were open to things. And so that's kind of always been my orientation. And as I've grown up and as I've kind of aged through hip-hop and experienced and watched that growth, I've kind of always been naturally open to things. But what I've watched some of my friends go through is this becoming our parents, you know,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh,
mm-hmm.
this music nowadays. I'm like, did you really listen to the album? Did you really listen to it? Because, you know, again, you know, I'm thinking my post-college years, which is 04, 05, and, you know, Young Jeezy was all the rage at the time. And it's like, well, people are like, well, I don't like what he's rapping about. Well, did you at least download the album? I know you didn't buy it, but did you download it?
Uh-huh.
No, I heard the song that was on the radio. Well, you can't judge anybody by a radio single. You know what I mean? So those kind of, you know, and just having that conversation with people that there's actually a lot of quality music that's being made. There's actually a lot of good things that are happening with hip-hop. And I just hated the kind of conversation that hip-hop was dead. Because I feel like that was because individuals felt like it had passed them by, you know, because it had passed you by. And you could no longer connect with it. So it was dead for everyone. And I just, that always bugged me. And I felt like that was a very narrow and self-centered perspective on a genre that, again, connects generations of people. I had the pleasure last summer of going to see Outkast. And I went with my daughter, who is a freshman in college now this year. She's doing her first year of college. And she knew the songs, probably because her dad is a big Outkast fan. But she knew the song because she had grown up with it. But there were kids her age. There were folks my age in their mid-30s. And then there were folks who were, you know, maybe around your age, early 40s, late 30s, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're all vibing together. We're all having a blast. Yeah. We're all having a good time. And as you said, you know, we're all acting a fool. You know what I mean?
That's what
you
all have in common.
Over a couple of guys who are 400 feet away from us, but we're feeling every word that you're saying. You know, and it's an unbelievable experience to connect, and it's almost, you know, if you're not a fan of music, you know, it's also like being, if you're not a fan of sport, to see how people react to things of that nature and how people connect with things that are very removed from them, but they still find this very visceral connection to either the music or what's going on a court or a field is I always kind of take a step back in those moments and just kind of, you know, soak it in. Like, this probably looks weird as hell to somebody else.
From outside,
Yeah, you got all these people kind of flipping out, and it's just a song. You know, but it's our song, right? It's their song, it's our song, and it's an unbelievable experience. So as we kind of develop this show and this concept, you know, it's kind of a obligatory hip-hop practice. Like, when two hip-hop heads meet, at some point, like, you got to vet each other's top fives.
Yeah, Yeah, I knew
it's
this was coming.
It's just kind of an obligatory process. You got to vet each other's top five, you know. And the top five is something that, you know, it just gives you a sense of kind of what shaped this person. Like, what, because there's so much, right? Because when I did mine, I was kind of like, man, I'm leaving this off, I'm leaving this off, and I'm leaving this off, and I'm leaving this off. And I could have put 20 songs in honorable mention.
Easy. I tell people, what's your top five? Like, well, it's a 20-way tie for 1 through 5. And they're like, nope, that's a cop
out. Exactly. Right, mm-hmm. Right. You're cheating. So let's talk about that, right? Let's go ahead and do it. Let's go through it. So any era, right? Let's go previous eras, right? Let's not count the kind of modern-day cats who are kind of like in the throes of the progression of the game right now. But let's go guys who maybe still be making music now, right? They may still be making music now, but they're not kind of in the throes of it as far as, like, being the iconic folks. Top five MCs, previous eras. And that's a very general term and very ambiguous, so run with it.
All right. So, you know, this is the Mount Rushmore. I'm good. This probably won't change no matter how I chop it up. And there's, again, a ton of people not on this list who I love, but if gun to my head. All right, so number one is Biggie. I'll fight anyone who contests that Biggie's not in the top five. So if he's not in your five, let's just set a date right now to go scrap. So are we counting Jay-Z as currently in the throes,
Jay-Z's
or is he done?
Jay-Z's
previous era. Okay, good, because really it's the previous era that counts. Okay, so Biggie and Jay-Z, all right, and that's all of my Brooklyn bias gone. Then I have Common, I have Ice Cube, and the fifth one, and I fought with this a lot, but he has to go in there just because of the role he played in my appreciation, right, is Chuck D. So those are my five.
Oh,
Biggie, Jay, Common, Ice Cube, Chuck D.
Nice. I can't argue with any of those picks. Again, all of those guys got consideration for me. And all of those guys, I hemmed and hawed. There were kind of like three locks, right? There were three locks for me. And then there were two additional spots where there were like 15 dudes. So I was like, but I like that. But, oh. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was really a challenge. Those last two spots were really a challenge for me. So my number one, and, you know, I feel like because of the group dynamic, this particular rapper is extremely underrated, but Andre 3000 is hands down to me the most dynamic MC when he raps that I've ever had a chance to listen to. My number two is Big.
All right, good. I got scrap. Perfect.
You're good. You said that, I was like, you ain't got nothing to worry about. So my number two is Big. And again, with Big and me, it was kind of, you know, we both, he was doing his thing as I was kind of really kind of solidifying my own identity as a, you know, hip-hop kind of sort. And so I was devouring everything that brother put out at the time, you know, from you know, the One More Chance remix to the, you know, Junior Mafia stuff. I mean, it was just all, I want it all. My number three was Jay-Z. And then this is where I kind of started to be like, I put Eminem at number four. Now, I have to, M from a flow, from a lyrical standpoint is bar none elite, and I respect that. And so a part of me is like, you gotta respect that. He's very good, and M has always had verses that have blown my mind away.
Yep.
But I never have really liked M's albums. Like, I've never really been like, yo, I want to hear that Eminem
song. The truth comes out.
You
about to get some hate.
But I completely.
Tweets, hate mail.
Yeah. But I completely respect him as an MC. And again, he's had some of the best guest spot verses. Like So and that was, but I put him there because of his impact and his ability. Really, because of his impact and his ability. My final spot. Now this was tough. Being a Chicago guy, Common gets a lot of consideration. I thought about Nas. But ultimately, I settled on a guy, again, who I think is extremely underrated from a big picture perspective. But again, as I start to kind of tick down my favorite songs, my favorite moments, my favorite verses, Black Thought of the Roots Crew takes my fifth spot. And again, just a ferocious, versatile MC. And I couldn't leave him out. So Andre 3K as my first guy. Big, Jay-Z, M, and Black Thought round out my top five. So, yeah, those are kind of the guys that I really – that really shaped, you know, my kind of perception of what a great MC can sound like, look like, act like, be like, think like, kind of a deal.
Yeah. I cannot challenge any of them. So Eminem is one of those guys that, I mean, whenever we talk lyrics, he's just pound for pound the best lyricist that's ever touched a mic. I mean, it's arguable, but barely, you know. And so it really comes down to, for me, to the extent, and here's the weird part about Eminem, for me, is that he is a singular talent, just an incredible, incredible talent. He was a phenom, you know, in pop culture. But think about now the role that Eminem plays in the game, right? Like he kind of came in so hot, and now Eminem is not someone who you're like, wow, you know, well, people are rapping differently or this is happening differently because Eminem came in the game. I think some of it had to do with the fact that he was co-signed by Dre. And so a lot of his success was linked to Dr. Dre's success, which was like a continuation, you know, and then getting linked with 50. And, you know, he just became this legend. Like, I listen to Shade 45 all the time, and it's only every now and again I realize, like, oh, this is Eminem's channel. You know, like it's
right.
Like he's
right.
Big, but it's almost as if he's not. He's popular, and he's also not really relevant in a way that is surprising for how popular and successful he's been. So, I'm with you on the top five. I could take him out. He couldn't knock anyone off my top five, but I can see that. And then Black Thought is the same. I mean, I love Black Thought. My thing is when I go song for song, track for track, he's a lyricist, but man, he needs a fire under him to, because sometimes he just gets caught in the words, and man, he can kill a song, you know. But as soon as you put Black Thought on an album with somebody else, and he's like, oh, I gotta, you know, almost go at this guy. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, every time he's on a track with somebody else, it's almost like, wow. Why did Tariq do it to him? But sometimes he gets in his own zone and he loses me. But that's the man. Tariq been nice. I don't know if you ever heard him freestyle when he was like 16. It was a mixtape with him on there. It was just insanity.
Right? You can hit a genius, right? You can hear like you know, and as hip hop guys, we've all dabbled in like trying to rap or make beats or scratch or whatever, because that's what you do. You have to engage in it, right? You have to engage in art.
Yeah.
It's not an art. You sit back and you kind of like, I just listen to the music. At some point, if you're really into this, you're gonna try something, right? You're gonna pursue one, whether it's you're gonna dance, you're gonna again make beats. You're gonna give it a shot. And when you hear him as a 16-year-old, you're like, yeah, nah, that's not me.
Like, I'm an amateur.
You know, yeah,
I can't professional.
Yeah, I can't do that. but go back to your Eminem points. I liken Eminem to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I think, like, when you think about Kareem and his Like, there isn't a lineage from Kareem, right? There aren't other guys who really duplicated what Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did as a basketball player, as a personality, as a personage. Even though he's the all-time leading scorer in the NBA, there is, like, it's almost like he doesn't, he's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like he's not there. He's not in that spot. And I think that's the same analogy you can make with him. And I think the reason is because Kareem did it in such a unique way. And I think it's hard to replicate that. Like, you know, in the late 2000s, you know, after Biggie dropped Ready to Die, there was kind of a formula, right? An album formula being kind of generated by the power that be in the industry, that you had to have a certain, you had to have a club banger, your street song, yada, 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 you know. And,
one for the ladies.
And, right, exactly. You know, and as this formula kind of comes along, you know, other rappers start to emulate that. Eminem came at such a from such a different perspective that, and one, the things that he was talking about and kind of the center of his angst was seemed to be centered around his dislike for his mom, and it's very hard. It's very hard to get a black boy to talk about his mom. So, like, it was, it was something that was very difficult for other artists to emulate and kind of make their own, because it was his. It was his unique thing. And the same with Kareem, like the Sky Hook. You know, there have been millions of basketball players who have come after Kareem, and no one has been able to perfect that shot.
Nope.
You know, and it's an unstoppable shot. You know, it takes so much technique, grace, coordination to do, and there have been other people who have been as coordinated, but no one could master that shot. And that's what I see with him, is that no one can really take his style and make it theirs, because it is him, you know, and it is very much him. And again, as to kind of connect him back to Kareem is the leading scorer in the history of the NBA, but if you have a conversation about the greatest player of all time, Kareem probably comes up sixth or seventh.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's
like,
true.
He's somebody that,
true.
That doesn't really get brought up. And again, it's almost like he didn't happen, because no one has really been able to kind of step into that. Like, there was no next Kareem. There was never, like, there's been the next Jordan or the next Magic or the next Larry Bird for every white guy who can shoot a jump shot and chew gum at the same time. You know what I mean? But there was never, this guy's going to be like Kareem. You know, even when there were other great big men in the league, there really wasn't that kind of a conversation about Kareem. And again, that was part of kind of his persona and his interactions with the media and things of that nature that kind of alienated him, whether by design or whether by his own doings. He was kind of not really embraced in that sense. So those
all right,
are two
I'm buying
of
that.
That I always
I'm buying have. That. I'm buying that. I like
so,
that. That I got to chew on that for a minute. I'm buying that.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question along the lines of this? I'm feeling folks out. So here's a question that I pose after I get to know folks a little bit. I say, okay, what was the first hip hop song you ever purposefully sat down and memorized? So not one that you heard a lot and then you kind of knew the words.
Mm-hmm.
One where you were like, before this day ends, I'm going to listen to this song until I know everything. If you wrote it down in a notebook and went over it, but you were like, I have to know this by heart, just because it's important to me to know this by heart. So what was the
right.
first song? I feel like this is also one of those questions that says, okay, I'm going to know where you're coming from when I know that.
Yeah. So for me, it was Rakim, I Ain't No Joke. And I remember the day as if it was yesterday. I was maybe 7, 8 years old, and you know, I was under 10. I don't know if I was 7 or 8, but I was under 10. My uncle's playing it, and I'm listening to it, and the horns and the bass, and I'm like, man, I want this to be like my like song. Like, I want people to know, like, you know, as a little kid, you kind of like, yo, man, don't mess with me. I ain't no joke. You know what I mean? And so, like, that concept as a young, pre-double-digit kid, that idea, like, yeah, don't bother me. Leave me alone. And, you know, I remember sitting in my uncle's room, And he got so upset with me because I kept rewinding it and playing it. And I was his favorite nephew, so he let me do it.
So
I kept rewinding it and playing it. And he, but he also knew what I was doing because I'm sitting there and I'm mouthing it. And then when I get a part, okay, then I start it over. And then I get that part, and then I get the next, like, four bars. And so that was the one, you know. And I remember sitting on the edge of the bed, just boom, play, boom. Play, rewind, play, and just kind of like, this is the one I'm gonna get. I'm gonna be able to recite this. And when this comes on, and part of it was, and I think part of it for me was my uncle enjoyed the song so much, so I wanted to be able to like get him going, be like, yeah, when he's going with the word, I'm going with the word too. You know what I mean? Like we could do this together, kind of a deal. So that for me, that was kind of like, and again, like when I talk. That connected you to your lineage, right? It connected me to my uncle in a way that gave us something. Again, he's in his 20s. I'm, you know, 9, 10, 8 years old, and we have this thing that we both share. You know what I mean? This song is our song, you know, because he likes it, and I like it, and we both know the words, and we can go back and forth, and he can do a verse, and then I can do a verse, or he can do four bars, and I can do four bars, and we can go back and forth. And so that was the song, you know, and a lot of good fun. But that was, like, the first one. I was like, I'm learning this song, you know.
All right.
So that
this confirms with me my thought about why Rakim is Rakim, is because – and he wasn't my first, but he was one of the first. So I'll answer the question. So the first song that as soon as I heard, I was like, I need to know song was L. Cool J, I'm Bad. The same year as Ain't No Joke, right? So I just remember hearing the organ and hearing this dude just going on. And I was just like, yo, I've never heard someone rap like this. I need to know everything that this guy is saying, right? And I listened to that song. Till my brother's tape popped. I think literally it popped, and I just never said anything. But I listened to that over and over and over again. To this day, I can still see, because I wrote some down on a piece of paper, because I was like, man, what is he saying about Attila the Hun and something? Who is Attila the Hun?
Yes.
I didn't even know what he was talking about.
Right.
But some of the reason why I think Rakim is that dude is because for those of us in, you know, in that era, he was rapping in a way that was so different from other folks that you were like, wow, you know, I have to sit down and really listen to it again and again and again so I can get it down. Whereas, you know, for Run DMC, right, which came out first, like, I could just listen to Run DMC 2 or 3 times and I knew all the words because they were still doing the old school rap, you know, structure. Then all of a sudden you had Rakim coming in and it was rapid flow and you were like, whoa, what is this? And so I think, you know, Rakim for the reason he is just Rakim, you know, a lot, why he is that guy, is he is the first person that I think most hip-hop heads had to sit down and study. And that's always going to give you that, like, well, no, he's just a different guy. He's just on a different plane.
Yeah. And throughout the course of hip-hop and as the lyrical side of the game has evolved, there have been those kind of betas, right, that patient zero, who has come along and done something lyrically, vocally, that you're like, whoa, whoa, this is way different. You know what I mean? This is something else. You know what I mean? And Rakim was, I agree, Rakim was that guy where he filled bars, you know, where I think there was spacing and sparseness to the older rap structure. And Rakim just kind of packed his bars. You know, he didn't overpack them. He packed them just right. You know what I mean? He had enough in there. And he really started to see flow, right? And I think Rakim was the one that's really started to build flow, where it was like, we're going from, you know, this to this to this, and we're not taking that breath. And breath control became important, right?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't stop on a snare, catch your breath, go again, 2 bars, 4 bars, stop on a snare, take a breath. It was keep going over the snare, you know, and that was something that was a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a couple minutes left. And I want to finish it up with this particular question. As we look at where things are at today, right? If we had to just kind of put a bubble around this current time frame and create a time capsule for generations to come, and they wanted to know about the last 4 or 5 years of hip hop, who are the top five MCs that you're in? It can be very personal right now. So who are the guys that you're into at this particular moment, the now guys, this current era of lyricists, artists that you're into?
It's probably for five. So, you know, the infamous Drake, you know, love him, hate him, he's a monster. In every little sense of the word, he's dominated everything. I'm not going to put Wayne in just because the last 3-4 years have been real uneven on Wayne, you know. But if you would have said the last 10 years, obviously, Wayne.
Thank you. We're good. We're good there. We're good there. Cause, Wayne is Drake, left me like, huh? Yeah.
Put whatever you had in your cup back in your cup, bro. Yeah, it's the same thing with Redman. I mean, at a certain point, you abuse drugs, and it affects the craft, love it or not. So Royce da 5'9" is a guy who I think is, how would I describe him? He's just one of these guys, you don't want a problem with him. You know, like for all the, I'm making money, I'm this, I don't think anyone really wants to come at Royce. Royce is just a monster. On the mic. Kendrick, I think, is also, you know, one of these guys. I equated Kendrick, I just saw him at ACL Live for the taping last week. And then I had some feelings about To Pimp a Butterfly. Pretty much kept them to myself because, you know, everyone I knew was just kind of on it, like, this is, man, a classic. And I was like, I don't know what it is.
You got a form. Let's talk about it.
Okay. So, you know, it was an album that I could listen to if I was in the mood to study and like really hear what he's saying. It's a deep album. It is artistic. It's jazz. It's bebop. I mean, it's like it's a beatnik album. It's something from the 60s, right? But as far as just catching you in the emotional state, it's just a tough album to get through. Just really tough. And, you know, I compare it to, you know, Good Kid, Mad City, which was also touched on a lot of deep stuff. But, man, that album just bang, you know, and this album doesn't bang. And I'm sorry. And so I went to ACL, and he started off doing his To Pimp a Butterfly joints. And people were grooving because it's good. And then, man, he did Swimming Pools. And it was like... the place came alive, right? The place came alive. So every time he did something from Good Kid, Mad City, the place was alive. When he did To Pimp a Butterfly, people were with it, but they just were like, you know, it's hard to really get amped to, you know, If These Walls Could Talk and in the same way as some of the other stuff. So good album, but man, I don't know if this is an album that I will be listening to for years. And I feel bad. I feel like a sellout saying that because I love Kendrick. I love the music. I love what he's trying to do. But, man, this was, for me, you know, a hard single, but this wasn't a home run.
I can dig that.
Okay.
I can dig that. You know, it's one I enjoy it a lot. I like the album a lot. But I hear what you're saying because for me to really kind of canonize an album in my personal collection, like it has to, as you said, I have to be able to like zone out, right? I have to be able to kind of go to that. It has to take me to that space, and there's the space, and I haven't been able to articulate the space that I go in my mind when I'm really digging something. But you know, it takes me on that time travel, right? I start time traveling, and I lose track of time. I'm like in this warp, in this bubble, and stuff can go on around me, but I'm locked into that. If I'm working while I'm doing it or whatever it is, I'm working out, an hour can go by and it can feel like 5 minutes. And that's what I mean. Like time stands still when I'm listening to something that I dig. And when I find that, it hits me and I go in that space and I know, right? And again, I enjoyed it. I love what he was saying, but it, you know, Black of the Berry is the one song that kind of got me in that space. You know what I mean? Where I was like,
okay,
all right, okay, this is my kind of, you know, I enjoy the music. I love it. I like it. But again, I feel you where it's like it doesn't, as Rakim said, MC Me's move the crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
that was my main issue with To Pimp a Butterfly. So, you know, when it came out in, I guess, March or April, I mean, the amount of positives written for it was just, man, I was like, okay, I'm going to love this album. And I put it on, and when I didn't love it, I was like, man, something must be wrong with me. Let me put this down and come back to it. But it's November now, and it's still a good but not all-time album to me. But to quickly finish the list, sorry, so Drake, Royce, Kendrick, Jay Electronica, you know, for frustrating the hell out of all his fans for the last 4 or 5 years,
everybody,
probably more than anything.
Yeah.
And then J. Cole, probably. J. Cole is, I think, best captures what's gone on in the last 4 to 5 years.
I like that list. And I love J. Electronica. I'm digging him. I just need a project.
Yeah, man.
Give me something, dog. Give me that frustration, you know. And yeah, like he'll do a couple of things and it'll just blow you away and you'll be, you know, extremely, extremely excited. And then it's nothing for 3 years.
It's the worst tease ever, man. I can't even really say his name to certain people. They're like, don't tell me nothing until an album is out, an EP, something.
Something, right? Something, you know what I mean? Give me 5 or 6 songs. Just tell me you're working on something. I want just something. I respect that list. I respect that list completely. Royce, I always say Royce is that old samurai that nobody wants it with him. Because all the young samurai know his sword is extra sharp. And, you know, he may not necessarily, you know, have the flashy, you know, outfit and a nice helmet and a nice, you know, samurai gear, but you come at him wrong, man. Hey, I agree with your assessment wholeheartedly on Royce. My 5 now, Kendrick, Drake, Killer Mike, J. Cole. And this one has grown on me a ton. Especially with his last album. A guy who I was kind of lukewarm on. He had a few moments, but this last album, I just felt like, yo, this dude is, like, it was one of those albums where I listened to it and it was like, it got me in that space. And that's Big Sean.
I knew you were going to say Big Sean. All right, I'm on. I'm in. I've been cutting clowns for my Big Sean love the last 2 years. And I'm like, no, you got to really listen to his album. Maybe this is what you're saying. This is one of those conversations where I have where I'm like, they're like, man, Big Sean, that dude that did the booty song. I'm like, no, I know. Trust me.
Exactly.
But listen to the album. Listen, trust me.
Yeah.
They don't trust me.
Yeah, Dark Sky.
No one trusts me.
Yeah. I mean, just, whoa. I mean, again, because I downloaded, so it was free. And so I just listened to it. I just dove into it and was like, let me check this out. And I was unbelievably surprised at how much I enjoyed it and how much I was like, I want to listen to this one again. You know, Paradise. I mean, Paradise, he just kills that song and the beat and, you know, and then the joint with the guy sample. I loved how he flipped that, and it's just a lot of good moments on that album that I really enjoy. And lyrically, he has been bringing it. Like, he has been bringing it. From Hall of Fame to Dark Sky Paradise, he's bringing it. The things he did before that, yes. And it was the same evolution Wayne went through. You know what I mean? A lot of younger guys, I used to kind of feel that way about Wayne because I came up with Cash Money was like, it, right? That was my senior year of high school. Juvenile dropped 500 Degrees. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Lil Wayne was on there. I'm like, okay. Yeah, I'm not really excited. You know, like, okay, Doobie's the show. You know, Juvenile is the show. You know what I mean? And as Lil Wayne, you know, you get to 2002, 2003, and everybody's just bugging over, you know, the Drought mixtapes and everything that Wayne is doing. I'm like, this is Lil Wayne, right?
Yeah.
Lil Dude from Bling Bling.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
I mean? And
that
then,
dude.
You, again, you start listening to it, and you're like, yo, dude got better.
Yeah,
and it's not something that you. I don't know if we've ever really had guys do that where they like come out at a certain point and have actually like you've been able to see a progression in their craft and guys have gotten better at rapping.
Yeah,
and I see that with Big Sean. He is really and he's found and distinguished himself stylistically. I really enjoy a lot of what he's doing right now. Some guys who I left off. Big Crit, Currency, Joey Badass. I love Joey Badass. So those are some guys that I Royce, obviously another dude. That Prime with him and Premier is another excellent project. But it drives me bonkers when folks say that hip hop is dead, man. You're just not looking hard enough.
like the great Mos Def said, you know, people ask me how hip hop's doing. Like, you want to ask how hip-hop's doing, how you doing? How we doing?
How you doing?
You know, if we're doing good, hip-hop's doing good. You know, if we do. It's like, so people say hip-hop is dead. I was like, are we dead? Have we just crawled up into a hole and stopped consuming music and stopped partying? I was like, no. So that whole thing was overblown. It aggravated me for at least 3 years. When people are like, hip-hop's dead, I'm like, this is just the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So I'm glad that that's no longer a thing people are saying. Because it was dumb to begin with. And as you can see from this list, like this five right here is a strong five. Your five, my five, strong five. It's a lot of good things to look forward to. There's more good music than I can listen to.
Yes. So I think that's a great spot to conclude this first edition of Hustle and Flows. It's been good talking with you, man. You know, we got to chop it up more. In between the shows, in between the podcasts, you know, as we build that kind of rapport, I think this is going to be highly enjoyable for me and you, but hopefully more enjoyable for the listeners out there. So, again, I appreciate you coming on. This is Hustle and Flows with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Signing off, Game Changer, say cool. Any words on your way out?
No, looking forward to it, man. And I'm glad we don't have to fight because we agree on Biggie.
Hey, we're good there. I'm sure we'll find some diverging points at some point in this endeavor. Right now, you know, we're two peas in a pod.
Yeah. All right.
So take care, man. I'll hook up with you. Next show will be coming in December, so check that out. We're going to try and hit you off with one per month as we go through this. So be on the lookout. Hustle and Flows. Marcus, say cool. We're going to keep it high for you. Until next time, peace.
Peace.